Welcome to Cultimatum, the podcast that delves deep into the culture of complexities of cults and human trafficking. I'm your host, Anonymous Andrew. Each week, we explore different facets of cult life and human trafficking, from the psychological manipulation to the brave stories of those who have escaped.
Hello, everyone. I'm Melody. I'm Andrew's co-host. Having experienced the depth of a cult firsthand, specifically the House of Yahweh, I'm here as an advocate for fellow survivors. My journey has inspired me to help others who find themselves in similar situations. This podcast is committed to respecting our guests' privacy to ensure their comfort and safety. We offer them the option to remain anonymous.
Additionally, we would like to include a disclaimer. The views and opinions expressed by our hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of Cultimatum or its affiliates. Cultimatum is not responsible and does not verify for accuracy any of the information shared by our hosts and guests. The content discussed on this podcast is based on personal experiences, opinions, and speculation, and should not be construed as professional services or advice. Neither the host nor the guest are assuming liability for any misuse or reliance on the information presented. This podcast is for informational purposes only, and listeners are encouraged to conduct their own research and seek professional advice where appropriate.
Before we dive into today's episode, we want to issue a trigger warning. Some episodes may explore explicit and potentially disturbing topics such as sexual abuse, rape, human trafficking, suicide, and other sensitive subjects. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to the Cultimatum Podcast, a culture of cults. My name is Anonymous Andrew, and with me tonight, I have my co-host Melody. Hi, Melody.
Hi, Andrew. We have got a guest today that is from an extreme sect of the William Branham cult. And for our avid listeners, you may remember that the name of the cult is The Message. And we actually did another interview with another guest that was from the same cult in episode number 10, Rebecca's story. So if you want to go listen to Rebecca's story, she was in this same group. But today we have Brianna Brown, and Brianna is a writer and a blogger. And she is here to share her story and her experience with the William Branham cult. Brianna, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure.
Yeah, thank you for joining us. Okay, so take it away. Where would you like to start?
Okay, so I was born and raised inside of the extremist sect of William Branham 32 years ago. It is located in Sherwood Park, Alberta, Canada. The leader's name is Terry Sproul. I am the third generation in my family that were a part of it. I was kicked out 6 years ago alongside of my ex-husband, and I stepped foot into the real world at that point in time, and now I'm a single mom of five children. How did we get there? That's a long story. Like I said, I was born and raised in it. My mom's dad came into it from Pentecost back in the early 80s. She and her siblings were raised in it. She moved from Newfoundland. There are sects all over the world. There's about 5,000 churches or cults that believe in William Branham. So they were in a church in Newfoundland that believed in William Branham. They moved out to Edmonton, Alberta, Canada, and there they met Terry Sproul, and the rest is history.
Could you give us a little background on William Branham? For me and for the audience who might not know who he is.
So William Branham is what they call a 20th century prophet. He was alongside Oral Roberts and Billy Graham. He claimed that Oral Roberts and Billy Graham were the false prophets that were brought to earth, and he was the ultimate prophet of God. He was born, there's no confirmation. There's a bunch of lies. It's either between 1905 and 1909. He was born in a little log cabin. And at the age of 7, he heard a whooshing sound in a tree on the way home from school. And that said to not defile his body in any way, for there is work for him to be done as he got older. And he went, and there, his big claim to fame is his healing ministry that happened in the 80s. And early 60s, he went around and he claimed to heal people. And then he heard a vision. He saw a vision in his bedroom alongside his wife. She was in the room at the same time, that said that there'd be three pulls and it was time to move into the third pull. He was killed by a drunk driver on Christmas Day in 1965, and he never began the third pull, but that is where the sect that I'm from, we took over, and the leader started preaching the third pull for us, which meant that it was no longer meant for the world. So we never did missions or things like that. It was now for tent. William Branham said he saw a tent, which meant we were going into what they said into the closet, and then which meant it was just for us. We were the only chosen few on the face of the planet that were the chosen bride of Christ.
I have a question that I have to be very careful how I word this. You said he was killed by a drunk driver.
Yes.
Was there any 1965 this happened?
Correct.
So I'm assuming you were not there.
No.
I think what a cult leader or a religious leader, high and almighty, would preach long longevity, but his life was cut short by, you know, I do not condone drinking and driving. So that's a horrible thing. But nevertheless, he was killed prematurely by a drunk. It wasn't like he died of old age or he had some cancer or something, that like a normal death. Was there anything ever said about that, like why his life was, because God chooses to take people from us in different, you see where I'm going with?
Yes. It was, I mean, there's so many different interpretations. The thing is with the William Branham cult, not one of the 5,000 churches believes the same thing. Not one of them can agree on anything. We all come from different beliefs, different life rules, things like that. The one, the sect that I come from, it was more, he was not going down the right path, so to speak. And it was his time. Like God had to take him off.
That's the answer I was looking for. Okay.
So, you know, the third pull could go on.
So God took him because he was not doing the work that God wanted him to do or something.
Yeah, there were a few instances throughout his life where he disobeyed God. And God killed his first wife and his first daughter because he disobeyed God. He took the message to, he kept going to the Pentecostal church, and God told him not to do so. So he disobeyed. So he claims that God killed his wife and daughter, and then he got remarried. So there were a couple times where that happened, and the death is included in that.
Wow. Interesting. I'm glad I asked that. Okay.
I have a couple questions based on some things that I read online. Does the William Branham or does your branch of the William Branham cult have connections to the Freemasons and or the KKK? Do you know anything about that?
From what I understand, yes. It was not highly taught in the sect I am from, but from the history that I have read, that would be correct, yes.
Did you say KKK?
I did. Ku Klux Klan. Correct. Yes. I just read that in my research. Go ahead, Brianna.
Jim Jones was a student under William Branham.
No kidding. I didn't know that. Wow.
Okay. That's interesting.
So there are a lot of ties to William Branham that people just don't know about.
Yes, that is interesting. So what was it you growing up in the William Branham, in your sect of the William Branham cult? How strict was it? What were some of the rules you had and that was different from people, let's say, in the regular world?
If we're talking regular rules, I couldn't wear pants. I couldn't wear any garment pertaining to a man. And they had to be skirts that fell below the knees because kneecaps are the most sexual thing on a woman's body, obviously. I couldn't wear like cat eye style glasses like the ones that I'm wearing today. No pierced ears, no short hair. My hair, I have photos of myself. My hair was past my knees. No makeup, no cleavage, very modest dress. Sleeves had to be down to here. Heels, if you wore heels, they had to be nothing higher than 3 inches. No anklets. No, you could color your hair, but it had to be natural. So you couldn't go from like brunette to blonde. If you wanted to do low lights or highlights, they had to blend with your hair. You know, we only could listen to Southern gospel music. It was the only genre of music we were ever allowed to hear. So turning on the car radio was quite a shock for someone like me. There was no, grew up without TVs. My mom, if we went into a grocery store, would cover my eyes so we couldn't see the magazines in the checkout aisle.
Like the National Enquirer, God forbid.
God forbid, yes, you know.
I, I, Can I jump in again?
Of course.
Some things just boggle my mind. I want to go back to the KKK. So there was a sect of this branch that was a racist sect?
We were extremely racist. We were mega. Like, we were mega through and through. I mean, we were Trump-thumping, horrible racists. And, you know, I'm the furthest thing from it now. I vowed to myself when we were kicked out to unlearn and risk and educate myself. Because if I came from that, what was on the other side? But I admit it. Like, that is who we were.
And again, I'm going to claim naivety or ignorance because I don't really know a lot about religion and cult. I'm learning a lot. But from my Roman Catholic upbringing and from my experience, religion was like all inclusive, that we're all God's children, right? And this is, Melody, this is the first time I'm hearing of this. In your experience, were cults racist?
I think it depends on the group and the sect, and some of them. So it might even be 50-50, but I don't know what exactly that percentage is. I will say that in my cult, we included all races, but in the beginning when I was there, the races were told they could not mix. Like, my sister at one point was dating a Hawaiian, and she was told, you can't do that because he's not your race.
He so believed that was, the same.
Yes. So they were there. We were told that all different races were there in the cult, but we were told we could not intermarry or intermix.
We couldn't mix bloodlines in our sect. And like there were many indigenous families in our cult, but they were not allowed to practice their culture. They weren't allowed to do the braiding that they do. They weren't allowed to burn sage. They weren't allowed to wear ribbon dresses. We were white supremacists and they were whitewashed. They had to become more like the whites and remove everything from their cultural heritage because their true cultural heritage is Jesus Christ. And so the cult were from whitewashed everyone that was when their skin color, if they were, we had a few Jamaicans, we had, like I said, indigenous, there were one Asian family, but for the majority, we were all white.
Where, I'm sorry, what state was this?
Edmonton, Alberta, Canada.
You said that. Okay, I'm sorry, Canada. Okay. Because you also mentioned Southern gospel music, and so that's South, Southern United States. Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, so like the Gaithers. Yeah, I don't know if you've heard of like the Gaithers, Bill Gaither, his music, things like that. We weren't allowed to listen to, you know, Reliant K or these modern day Christian musicians and bands. They were off limits. Drums were of Satan, like having anything with a beat was not of God. So our music was very boring.
Yeah.
And like I said, we didn't grow up with TVs, never went to the movie theater. I wrote a blog the first time I walked into one with my ex-husband. I thought God was going to murder everyone within it because I was there and I didn't believe it anymore. So it's been a culture shock, to say the least, the last 6 years.
So what would you be willing to share with us? What happened that got you shunned, excommunicated, kicked out? What was it that got you to leave?
So my ex-husband received a phone call. He ran his own company and he committed bank fraud. And his dad had co-signed on the bank loan. And so the bank calls his dad, and his parents have close ties with one of the cult elders. And instead of talking to my ex-husband, his son, he went straight to the cult leadership. And my ex-husband received a phone call. It was a Wednesday night, and said, you and your wife are no longer able to attend, for the Bible says not to make fellowship with a wrongdoer. And so he came home from a walk on the phone call, came up, and I'm still living in the same house. And he came up to the bonus room and said, we have been kicked out. And I threw an adult tantrum because it's the only life I knew. But there was something within me that said, no, this is the right thing. Like, I just can't go back. I had been having my own questions over a period of time. My parents had been kicked out in 2010. So this was 8 years after that. And I wiped the tears. I searched on Google, like, a haircut that was short. I messaged the lady that had been doing my hair naturally for a couple of years and said, can you do this? And she said, well, I can, but I won't because I know your rules. And I said, I no longer go there. And I just, in my head, I vowed to myself, looking at my ex-husband, and I said, whatever it takes, I'm going to learn, unlearn, risk, lose whoever and whatever it takes to go from what this is, my whole 26 years, to whatever's on the other side. And here I am today.
I have a question. When you were, you said your parents were kicked out 8 or 10 years before you were. During that time, were you excommunicated from them? Were you able to talk to them? And were you able to then reach back out to them when you were kicked out to try to mend that relationship?
No, I was excommunicated from my parents. I got married at 19 in 2000, and my parents were not allowed at my wedding. I moved in with the assistant pastor and his wife when I turned 18. He walked me down the aisle. They were my parents. They became my cult mom and dad. They were this close to changing my last name from Brown to theirs. I went and saw my mom after I started having children. I invited her a time or two just to visit, to see her grandbabies. But we were not allowed a relationship. We did not celebrate any holidays together, no Christmas, no phone calls. I actually was kicked out one time before the official kick out, and that was due to the fact I went and saw my mom and I told her some information about one of the sermons that had happened, and they found out about it, and I was kicked out for a month, a year before the official kick out. When we were kicked out on March 21st, 2018, my first phone call was to my mom. I called her. She picked up the phone and the first word wasn't hi. It wasn't hello. How are you? It was, you have been kicked out, haven't you? And I'll never forget it. And I said, yes, I have been. So for the past 6 years, my mom have built a relationship from absolutely nothing to her being one of my bestest friends. She has an amazing relationship with her 5 grandchildren. She lives 5 minutes from me. Now, my biological dad, on the other hand, he condemns me to hell and hates everything that I'm doing. He's no longer in the cult, but he believes that God speaks to him directly. Oh, and talking out about William Branham and God makes him extremely angry at me. And he does not think that his grandchildren or myself bring any edification to God, so we have no relationship. So my mom's partner is now my stepdad, and he has taken the role of my dad and the grandpa for my children, and he's the most amazing human that's come into our lives.
That's beautiful. I'm very happy for you. That warms my heart to hear that your mom's back in your life, and that, you know, she is now able to have a relationship with your children, her grandchildren. That's awesome.
Yeah, it hasn't been easy. My mom was in the cult for 50 years herself. Wow. And so she's had the deconstruction that I have. She's been, actually, it was my first blog. So I had a blog I started in 2020 that my ex-husband deleted after we separated. But after I began that one, she found herself in therapy, which was condemned by the cults, of course. So that was a huge step for her. But she's been in it for 3 years now and it's been an incredible journey to watch. And I am also in therapy. And so we're on this road together, and it's a relationship that we were never able to have in the cult. My mom and I were never close, even when I was a young girl. She was closer to my sister. So I never didn't know what to expect when it came to our relationship, but we got along so well, and my mom had a makeover last year. So, you know, her hair was from long. She cut it short. It's bright red. She wore jeans for the first time last year. She'll tell everyone she talks to, she's like, it's only because of Brie, because I'm constantly like giving her gentle nudges, you know, to go the next step. And so we've been healing on this road together, and there have been times where we haven't talked for 2 months. There have been times where we hang up the phone. There have been times where we yell at each other, because her world was flipped upside down. So was mine. And all of these truths she once thought were true came to the surface that they weren't. And then you realize that you were abused, you were lied to, you were manipulated. All these words that you don't know what they even mean when you leave. So we've been on this incredible healing journey together, and it's been a beautiful thing.
Well, that sounds amazing.
Good for you. Tell us about your blog.
Okay. So my blog is called Not a Mommy Blog. I began it a year ago in November. I restarted the one that I had done in 2020. That one was called Resetish. But then, like I said, my ex-husband deleted it. So my blog tells my life story in the cult and post-cult. So as I said, I'm a single mom of 5 children. I don't share custody. I'm 24/7. They are mine. My ex-husband doesn't even live in the same Canadian province as we do anymore. I don't receive child support. I'm doing it all on my own. So I share my life story, the 26 years in the cult, what brought me to the marriage at 19. I had 5 children in 7 years. And what it's like on the outside, what the journey has been of deconstruction, what it's like raising 5 kids on my own, what it's like a relationship with my mom. It's just everything all at once. And it's just the real of me. It's vulnerable. I don't hold anything back. It's the good, the bad, and the ugly. And I love to write. I wasn't allowed to go to school past grade 6. I had to be homeschooled. My mom became my teacher. My sister became my only classmate. And in grade 4, my teacher told my parents that one day I would write a book. And they laughed and said, well, no, she won't. She can.
I was just going to ask you, do you have any affirmations or intentions on writing a book? Because it sounds like you have.
I do. One day I do. It's finding the time. And right now I'm trying to find work, a full-time job to support myself and my 5 children. You know, I don't have any secondary education. What I do have is my writing ability. And so I've taken to a blog and, you know, I'm working on another big project out of the United States in regards to the cult. And hopefully something comes of it. But in the meantime, my blog is just a way for me to use the skill that I love, that is my whole heart. And hopefully if someone discovers me or wants to hire me, that's great. And I don't want to like plug myself or use this to do that.
No, go for it.
We want you to, and just for the audience's information, we will definitely have a link to Brianna's blog in the show notes so that they can find you, because I'm sure some of the audience members are going to hear this. They're going to be curious. They're going to want to know, so they'll know exactly where to go to find you.
Thank you. And yeah, so my teacher told my parents, they laughed. My purpose was set out for me from the time I was born. I was a girl. It was, you know, you get married between the ages of 16 and 21. If you turn 21 and you're not married, you're considered an old spinster. You know, from the time you're 5 to 16, boys and girls are segregated. Then at 16, you're thrown into something called a young people's group. And that's the first time you're able to mingle, girls and boys. But your purpose isn't to have fun or make friends. It's to find your spouse. And so for myself, I married my childhood's cult sweetheart, if you will. And I got married at 19. So our courtship, we didn't call it dating, of course. So our courtship to engagement to marriage was 13 months. It was very short. The cult leader says, you know, you can court for a while, but short engagement, because you're not allowed to have premarital sex. When you're engaged, the only touching you can do is holding hands. So if you keep the engagement short, it lessens that temptation. And then you head right into your marriage. And birth control is not an option. Your whole purpose as a woman is for children. And what an honor it is of God to bring forth the children of God to earth. And so, you know, you have this God complex that's bigger than earth itself. And so 3 months after I was married, I got pregnant with my firstborn, and he will be 13 in April.
Question.
And I have a 10-year-old, a 9-year-old, a 7-year-old, and a 5-year-old.
Okay. I have to ask this question.
Okay.
We had a guest on last week. I don't remember the cult.
Mormon. LDS.
They were it was the Mormon. They were told, and in Melody's case, they were even given a book on how you can have sex in the bedroom with your husband. It was for procreation only, not pleasure. Did they teach the same?
Yes. So we all received a book before we got married called Happy Honeymoon. So actually, before the year 2011, the cult leader actually took each couple into his office and had this conversation face to face. but then he wrote it all out in a pamphlet. So I was, it was actually given from the leader to the assistant pastor of whom I lived with the night before I got married. So instead of having a bachelor party and partying and having a great time, he called me into his living quarters and handed me this pamphlet and said, sit down in front of me and read it. And I didn't put it together all those years ago. I mean, I was 19. I had just turned 19. I turned 19 January 1st. I got married March 5th. So it was right on the cusp of 18-19. He made me read it while my two bridesmaids were at the house in front of him three times through. And it talks, not out loud in my head, but he watched me and he knew what was in it. So it talked about how sex is not what Hollywood portrays it to be. The man has to, you know, do this and that. It is not for pleasure. It's for procreation. You have to remember, up until 2 months before this, I didn't even know what my body was doing when I had a cycle or my period. You know, the girls that were in my group that were getting married, there were five of us. They call each other brothers and sisters. A sister sat us down in her home and she talked to us about our periods. She talked to us about something called the Serena method, which was a natural form of child planning. So you take your basal body temperature same time every day, you ovulate, all those things. But I knew nothing up till that point. All I knew was that I could get pregnant because that was my purpose in life. So when I read this pamphlet, it was shocking to say the least.
Of course.
But I will say, like, my ex-husband and I, like, we had had premarital sex. We had snuck away. We were teenagers, hormonal. And with doomsday looming over our heads.
Good for you.
Thank you. We didn't know if we would ever see our wedding day. The cult, the assistant pastor actually said to me in January of 2011, he said, I'm just going to say this. He's like, I don't know if you're going to see your wedding day. I don't know. We have a feeling that God's going to come before then. So, you know, you have doomsday looming. My life was, I viewed it as milestones. You know, it was like, if I reach grade 12, if I could have the cult graduation, if I could just make it there, because at a cult graduation, I could hold a boy's arm as I walk down the stairs. And oh my God, when you're 17, just to hold a boy's arm was just the greatest thing ever. And then it was, oh, if I could just make it to this trip that we were going on. Oh, if we could just make it to courting, if I could just make it to engagement, if I could just make it to the wedding day, if I could just experience sex once, then Jesus can return. So with doomsday looming and not knowing if we'd make it, we would sneak away early in the mornings. And I mean, it was 5 minutes in the back of a car. It was nothing magnificent, but it was just that feeling of being connected with someone because my parents were kicked out. My parents were always in and out of the cult offices. The assistant pastor, they told me they had four kids of their own and they said, we were harder on you than we are with any of our other children. I was dealt with every night. There was another issue every single night for a year for me. And so having that premarital sex was like a connection with a young person that I never experienced before. So then we got married, but it was the first time we were ever like alone in a room in the hotel room, which was terrifying, you know, driving alone. We went straight to our honeymoon, but we had to return before the following Sunday because God is in the cult midst and we couldn't not be there when God is speaking. So we were only allowed to go away for 6 days. We had to return. And when we returned, I remember a sister coming to me and she was like, we all know what you've been doing the past 6 days. And it's like, okay, that's really awkward and weird, but thanks for sharing that with us. And yeah, like I said, 3 months later, I became pregnant because I had a breakdown in front of my ex-husband 2 months in and I started crying. And I said, what if I can't get pregnant? Like, what if I can't have a baby? That's my next purpose in life. And he's like, we've been married for 2 months. Maybe we can just give it a bit of time. And I was like, no, like, I don't know. What if my body has, you know, infertility, all these things? The following month, I got pregnant.
And now you have five.
Yes. Yeah. No, I'm as fertile as a rabbit, I like to say. I have five children. And birth control wasn't an option. And the cult leader said, we don't base the amount of children we have on finances. And the cult I'm from are massive Zionists. They believe in Zionism. The cult leader has connections with the grandmother of Zionism in Israel. I've met her. She comes to visit our cult here in Sherwood Park, Alberta. He stays in her home. I've been to Israel myself, and I have visited Zionists. I've visited settlements, illegal ones. And so we believed that their physical life, we were parallel with our spiritual lives. So their physical lives, they, you know, eight kids, we had to do the same.
Can I ask you, so once you got married, you came back from the honeymoon, and you got pregnant in 2 months, you then proceeded to have 4 more children. Did you follow that book that leader made you read 3 times? Did you and your husband do the thermometer thing, whatever, and only have sex when you were fertile? Or did you just say, screw this? Because the last guest, they were doing it on the kitchen counter. They were doing it in the all over the place. But they admitted it. They had a conversation with the bishop, and that's how the bishop found out. And then she was punished for it.
They were punished and told that they had to have what she called vanilla sex from then on. Yes.
Right. Personal question, but did you follow
it? Fair. It's fair. So yes. We actually. So my ex-husband was not vanilla, I will say that. Everything that I have learned when it comes to sex was through him and his knowledge from it, from a construction site, is what I like to say. We had no professional teaching. We had no parents to teach us. However, because I lived with the assistant pastor, I did not want to be a bad Christian girl. I wanted to obey the rules. So I actually took it to the assistant pastor's wife one service and said that my ex-husband wanted to do all these different sexual acts that were against what we were supposed to do. It was one position, which was missionary. It was not for pleasure. You know, oral was not allowed. It was not okay. So we actually had a meeting with the cult leader face-to-face, not in a pamphlet anymore. And his words were, certain holes are for certain things. He actually confessed to us that he had read books about gay sex and lesbian sex, and the acts that they do were not for us to participate in. I'm laughing because you're like rubbing your forehead. And I understand it. I know it's so unbelievable. It's so fucked up. Excuse my French. But that's what it was. So actually we left that and it became very vanilla again because I had gone to the leader. And after a while, I mean, then we were kicked out and we didn't have to do vanilla anymore. But yeah, no, in the cult, I was very much like, no, we can only do this. Like your eyes should be seeing each other at all given times. Like you can't explore each other's bodies, you know, all those things. The most glorious thing is, you know, a pregnant body because it's like the child of God. All that BS, if you will.
Okay. With that, I'm not trying to compare, but I'm really fascinated by these cults and their protocols and teachings. Were you also told to not be sexy? Like,
oh, yeah.
Yeah. Because the last guest that we interviewed, she had to put on weight and she did.
We couldn't put on weight. So actually being overweight was a sin.
Really?
We had a lot of cult services where the cult leader talked down on especially the women who were of a bigger size. There were a few women who were kicked out over their weight. They had to lose it before they could come back.
So there was like body shaming.
100%. Yes. Wow. So we were not allowed to be sexy. If you ever go to my Instagram, one of my pinned photos is me as a trad wife before it became a fad all over TikTok. You know, very Victorian style dresses and very long hair, no makeup, no cleavage, you know, buttons up to here, if you will. Like I said, skirts always had to sit below the knee, especially when you're sitting. So when you're standing and sitting, Your heels had to be 3 inches or below. No cat eye, no makeup, no sexy hairstyles. We could curl our hair. There are some sects of William Branham. They're not allowed to curl their hair. We were allowed to curl our hair, but we had to be modest, right? We had to be, we were under the headship of our husbands.
But you could look pretty for your husband.
Yes, we could look pretty. I mean, pretty is subjective. I hated who I saw in the mirror. I cried. I mean, I was getting ready tonight because I'm going out after tonight to a Christmas party. But I just looked at myself and I just thought, you know what? I just love who I see in the mirror. You know, I match who I am on the inside, but I never got to see that. My ex-husband, when we were in the cult, he had reached out to a woman and he wanted to have sex with her. And that did a number on my mental state. And I asked him why he did it. And he said, because she's a pretty girl and I'm a stupid man. And that, my confidence fell from that point forward. Because, she wasn't in the cult anymore. And she had short hair and she was wearing makeup. And I knew that the men of the cult, they craved that. You know, they didn't.
Yeah, because I said this on the last one. We are human, and Yes. You're going to have men are visual, and they're going to see something pretty, and they're whatever hormones and dopamine and all that stuff has got to, oxytocin and all that.
So our cult leader told the men that if they see a pretty woman, they can take one good look and never look again. So that was the rule for the men seeing other women. And all of us, we struggled with it greatly. Because we would go out and we would see these beautiful women, you know, wearing jeans and heels. And I remember one of my young, I was 17 and he was a friend of mine. And he was like, oh, he's like, my weakness is girls in jeans and cowboy boots, because he was a cowboy. That's what the boys were raised to be. And here I was like in a skirt three sizes too big for me, because you can't see your panty lines through your skirts. Modest as ever, no earrings, no tattoos, no makeup. And I thought, this is what you all think. You don't want us, but you have no choice but to take us because we're in the cult. But you're not attracted to us. We even hate how we look, but we can't do anything about it because us women were... It was a hard path in the cult. That's what the cult leader said for the women. And William Branham said it. It was hard for the women because we had to be different. In the wintertime, we had to wear skirts over our snow pants. It gets freezing cold here, minus 30 degrees Celsius. And we had to wear skirts over our snow pants to be modest. When we would go skiing or snowboarding, we would have to subject ourselves to public humiliation by wearing skirts as we skied down the hill, being called flying nuns, laughed at, that the boys we were with would not ski with us because they were embarrassed to be with us. And these are the stories that nobody wants to tell. So were we allowed to be sexy? No. Can I be sexy now? 100,000%. And even as a mom of five, I embrace it.
Good for you.
Thank you. I'm just going to make an observation here. I'm going to guess the answer is no to this. But were the women told if they saw a guy they were attracted to, could they have one good long look and then never look again?
No.
Okay. I figured that was the answer, but not. I just wanted to ask the question, right?
Yeah, because the men, William Branham and the leader of this cult, like they knew men were visuals, but women were the weaker sex. That's what William Branham claimed. You know, Eve caused the fall in the Garden of Eden. And our sect, William Branham, he didn't believe that Eve ate an apple. We believe that her fall was sex with the serpent. So that is why we had so many strict rules around sex, was because that's what happened in the Garden of Eden. The serpent he was a very sexy man. He was very good looking, according to William Branham. He was that of a Hollywood star, if you will. And Eve apparently looked like Marilyn Monroe. That's what William Branham said.
Well, it brings a whole new idea of the serpent or a snake being involved. I'm just going to throw that out there.
Yes, exactly. I'm like, well, you know.
Oh, that's funny.
So that's where the whole thing with sex came in. And So then she brought sex to Adam. So it wasn't, she didn't bring an apple of knowledge or education. She brought sex. And that's why our sex was very regimented.
By the way, this has never come up before, but this is, and my personal belief, but Adam, the story of Adam and Eve is just fabricated. There was no Adam and Eve. You know, if you believe evolution, we developed from Neanderthals. So yes, at one point, two humans had sex, but I don't think there was an apple tree and a serpent in it. But that's just my opinion.
I mean, I'm an atheist, so you're not saying...
Oh, really? Okay, good.
Yeah, I do not believe in any god. I am not
good
religious
for you.
Whatsoever. I can't get behind it. Boy. I blaspheme it all the time. I went from like the furthest mega right-wing extremist to complete atheist. So
wow. Okay.
So I assume
that
you're not raising.
That I usually ask at the end.
Yeah, I was going to ask how are you. I assume you're not raising your children with any religion then as well.
No, I'm not raising them with any religion. But if they do want to learn about religion, I have told them we will learn about all religions, not
good.
Just ones descendant of Christ, not just ones that are of white supremacy. We will learn about them all. And then they have their own freedom of choice to choose, if they so do, to be a part of whatever they want to be. However, I can say right now, they don't like God. They know what I've been through. My oldest was almost 6, or he turned 5 when we were kicked out. He remembers some horrible things. Obviously, the way they discipline their children is not okay. And so he remembers that. So he is grateful that we're out. And he does not believe in God. My kids don't. But they've asked questions, and I'm very open with them. I don't hold anything back like my parents did with me. But that's my stipulation. I'm like, if you want to learn about it, it's not just Jesus this and Jesus that. It's everything. It's all around the world, all religions.
Okay.
I like that.
We opened up with the fact that you're a single mom of 5 kids. Are you looking for a mate, and would you marry again?
Well, I actually do have a boyfriend.
Oh, there you go.
Okay. I do. Yeah. The most amazing man that has completely altered my brain chemistry on how men actually are. He's the kindest, most understanding. You know, he said to me the other day, because some moments in time I will cry just due to my healing and what I haven't been able to participate in and what I've missed out on. The place I am in my life at 32, and you know, I don't have secondary, I have 5 kids. It's not me first, but I need something to provide for them. And he's like, I'm right here holding your hand so you don't fall. He's gentle. Like my ex-husband, I mean, there's nothing you can't find by the Freedom of Information Act here in Canada, but I'm a victim of domestic violence. That is why we separated. I took him to court 2 years ago, and he was found guilty of domestic violence. So I don't know. I didn't know what it was like to have someone that actually wants to be in my life and my children's lives, someone that actually can communicate and is understanding and has patience.
And makes love to you, I would
yes.
imagine.
It's actually the first time, if we're, you know, to be very open, the first time we had sex, he said, do you want to have sex or do you want me to make love to you? And it was
oh wow, nice.
It just like I was like, what is happening? Yes. And that's just it. Like I had a lot of trauma when it came to sex. I am a victim of spousal rape, so I was very petrified, if you will, when it came to having sex with someone else. But he has guided me through everything. He's held my hand, and I'm not vanilla, but
good for you.
We've come a long way, but he's been a major part of my healing. He's had nothing but understanding and kindness
awesome.
To extend to me. My kids adore him. He came to their Christmas concert the other night. We went skating with Santa. You know, we weren't allowed to believe in Santa. We couldn't. Christmas was just gifts for the kids. So, you know, we get to participate in all these things. And he's right there by our side. He's never once said anything about my attire. He's like, I love everything you wear. You can't do anything wrong when it comes to it. Yeah. So am I open to marriage again? That's a really hard question, just because of everything I've gone through. As of right now, I'm not opposed to it, but am I going to rush into it? No. What we have right now in our arrangement is beautiful. It's, you know, we don't live together. We have our own homes.
If it ain't broke, don't fix it. Keep going. Just keep going at what you're doing and take it day by day. And
he's taking me to Paris in April.
Awesome. That sounds fun.
Nice.
Go ahead, Brianna.
So I was going to say, it's the first holiday I'm going on in 13 years. I haven't had a break in 13 years.
Wow.
And I mean, I can't afford it, obviously, but he's doing this for us, and it's been his dream to take me away so he can see the other side of the world through my eyes. So he's taking me to Paris, Morocco, and Spain. We're going for 2.5 weeks, and I'm just over the moon excited.
Does he have a single sister?
Are the kids staying with grandma?
I think some of them are going to stay with some friends, and the other two might stay with grandpa.
Okay, awesome.
Yeah.
And I'm not.
All right.
I'm just going to throw this in here. I'm not condoning anything that your ex has done, but I'm sure that some of what his behaviors are caused from what he was taught by the cult as well. And I hope he unlearns some of his toxic, negative, unhealthy behaviors as well. And I hope he's able to move on in a healthier way. And obviously you won't know that because you don't have any contact with him, which that's probably for the best. But I'm just going to say, I know a lot of men are learning unhealthy and given unhealthy advice in these cults as well. And it's tragic. It's tragic because it hurts men and women and their relationships with each other. It's very sad.
100%. And that's, I say it too, you know, and he has some severe mental health concerns as well. And so you mix the two. And it's a very deadly concoction. You know, I talk about it the summer of 2021 when it all fell apart. You know, I cut him down from taking his life in our bathroom with 5 kids in the home. He pulled a gun on us. I tried to get him the help that he so deserves and needs. I took him to our mental health crisis emergency center here in our city. I would pick up his medications on my way home. But there came a point where I was told by actually a police officer who came to the hospital we were at, because our daughter at the time was 2 and she had a blood infection. And my ex-husband had done another suicide attempt at that time. And he said, you can do everything right to help him, but until he wants to help himself, there's nothing can do. And it changed everything for me. And from that moment forward, I couldn't make him take his medication. I even brought them to him every morning, you know, with breakfast. I ran a day home on top of having 5 kids. I ran a day home, which is like a daycare. I had 6 kids on top of my 5. So 11 kids in my home every day. He was at home. He would stay up till 6 in the morning. Overnight, he was drinking six pack of beer. He was smoking cigarettes. He was smoking marijuana. He would sleep all day, stay up, play video games, and have this horrible, you know, so all of these things were happening, and it came to a point where the kids had to go back to school, and I said, we have to do something, and he said, I don't want the kids. I just want you and me. The physical abuse upped. It had been years of abuse, but at that point, I talked to my friend, and she said,
you made the right choice. Brie, I'm an alcoholic in recovery, 10 years sober. I live with bipolar disorder, but I'm asymptomatic. You are not, nobody will get better from any mental illness or substance abuse or any behavior like domestic until they want to change themselves. So you got out when you did. And I always want to say thank God, but if you're an atheist, we can't thank God. But thank the universe that you were able to do that at that time. We have to begin to wrap up. Our audience is made up of many ex-members, but we know that we have sprinkled in there members who are either clandestinely listening to our podcast or on the fence about getting out. I'm going to give you a couple minutes to talk to them about how to get out, pretend it's a blog. To give us a paragraph blog on.
Just give your advice to somebody who is either thinking about joining a group or is thinking about leaving or any of those situations.
Okay. I say cults are everywhere. They're not just religious. They are everywhere in our world. They are easy to fall into. They give you a sense of community like never before. They also prey on you when you pray, as in P-R-E-Y. They prey on you when you are at your most vulnerable. So when you are feeling lonely or you're scared or you're needing money or something, they will lure you in. I will tell you, the cults that I come from is a mega church. They have everything from zip lines to gazebos and barbecues to ice rinks, soccer fields. They have their own school building. It is a home away from home that would make you feel like you are a celebrity.
On the outside, but on the inside.
But once they get you and they hook you, everything changes. Then the control happens. Then they start changing you and your glow starts to fade. I was born into it, so I never had that outside glow. But I have ex-cult friends who came into it and then left again. And they talk about how it is that sense of community, that money, that, you know, offer of help and guidance. And then it all trickles away into control and manipulation. And they slowly get into your head and, as they call it, brainwashing. And before it, and then it's too late. And then you have a really hard time to leave. You have a question. It,
very much like a relationship where you're on your best behavior for the first 3 to 6 months and then the honeymoon period, and then the true colors come out very much. And we've made that analogy on this podcast many, many times. Cults can be very much like relationships. They suck you in, they bait you, they show you the best sides of themselves until they got their hooks into you, and then surprise!
Unhealthy, toxic relationships.
Unhealthy, toxic relationships.
Yes, toxic.
And if it ever comes to a point where they start taking you away from everything that you love on the outside, that's a major red flag. If you can't have your family and friends, if you can't go here or there, if they are directing you and telling you you have to be at the cult or the church, you know, 4 times a week, and if you're not, you're hauled into a meeting. If they
they're telling you how to dress, if they're telling you how to have sex, if they're telling...
if, like, we have to give 15% of all of our money. If you're on the... if you're on the inside trying to get out or thinking about it, I will say there are those of us on the outside who can see you. You're not alone, even though it feels like the loneliest thing in the whole wide world. It's scary. I won't sugarcoat it. Coming into something that you have been brainwashed to believe is hell on earth. But with every step, I'm living proof. Every step you take might feel like there's bricks on your feet, but there's no lightning bolts coming down. There's no snakes hopping out of coffins. The God is not going to cause you to have a car accident and kill you just because you're listening to Miley Cyrus or Katy Perry.
Unless you're William Brennan.
Yes, yes, yes. There is, you know, you're not going to be judged for how you look. You're not going to be judged for what you do. There is not a lot of, you know, boots on the ground type guidance or community centers you can go to for religious trauma. That is something that there are a few of us that are working on such things. But there are those of us who are willing. I'm willing to, if you want to slide into my DMs, if you want to, like, I am open to having conversations. If you want to write me an email through my blog, you can. I am here to hold your hand. My whole purpose with my blog, I've always said it from day one, if it helps just one person, just one on their journey to go from survival, I call it survival to thrival, just to thrive and know that life on the outside is beautiful. It's not going to be easy, but with the right people and, you know, if you're willing to let someone hold your hand for those first few steps that you take, it's a beautiful life. And that's my whole goal. And there's community outside of cult community. There's beautiful community. It's not toxic. It's not controlling. You're free to be you, and love abounds, whatever that looks like for you.
And there's a lot of support, like Facebook groups and other outlets and podcasts and there's a lot of support out there, especially in today's modern society, because the cult awareness is really on the verge of exploding. And
yes.
So,
and there's education, right? Educate yourselves. That's my number one thing. Read, listen, research. And, you know, education's of the devil is what we heard, but that's not the case. Educate yourself. And when you do, I like to call them their pyramid scheme of cults crumble. As soon as you educate yourself, the pyramid scheme falls. So do it, reach out, and we're all here for you.
Bree, we can't thank you enough for joining us. What an amazing story and an amazing happy ending. And thank I wish you the best. And I'm so happy that you're happily in a romantic relationship and not having vanilla sex. And and you look fantastic. So
thank you.
The best of luck to you. And
thank you.
We'll put everything in the show notes. Your blog and your social media. So people do want to contact you, they'll be able to do so.
Thank you. And it's been a pleasure. Thank you for inviting me on. It's been so much fun talking to the both of you. And I wish you all the best on your podcast success. And hopefully we'll meet again.
Yes. All right. Yes. We enjoyed having you. And I'm just going to add that your cat eye glasses are adorable. I love that style. I have those.
Yeah.
I have some very similar to that, but I love that cat eye style and they look adorable. So I'm so happy for you and your healing journey with your extended family. And I just wish you all the best in continuing on that healing journey. And hopefully being here on the show is as part of that healing journey for you as well.
It sure is every time. So I am really grateful from the bottom of my heart. So thank you so much.
Thank you
for coming on the show. And we want to thank Brianna once again for coming on the show and sharing her story and her resilience. And what a fun story to listen to her talking about where her life is today and how excited she is to just be doing those simple things. It reminds me a lot of, I can't remember her name offhand, but she was the Potter's House, the young gal that was so excited about going to a concert. You can tell that Brianna's found a new, unfamiliar excitement about her own life and just doing simple, normal things that, you know, that we kind of take for granted when we're in the regular world, you know, when we're not in that cult environment. Yeah, it's just fun to see her, you know. I'm going to say blossoming or coming out of her shell, so to speak, and figuring out who she is, deconstructing her own life and finding her way.
And enjoying non-vanilla sex. I just had to throw that in there.
Yes, for sure. No, she's, it was a great interview. We so appreciate her coming on. And I was trying to find a documentary on this William Branham cult or the Message cult. And I didn't have very much luck finding anything on that, but I did find a couple of books by an author, John Andrew Collins, and he wrote a book called The Cult of William Branham. And then he wrote another book called The Preacher Behind the White Hoods and subtitled A Critical Examination of William Branham. Because if you recall, we talk about that this William Branham cult had connections with the Freemasons and the KKK. Which was just an interesting little thing that we'll put in there. And I'm guessing that book about the preacher behind the white hoods goes into a little bit more of the connection directly with this cult and the KKK.
That surprised me, that whole racial thing.
Yes.
I was unaware of that. This is, for me, this is kind of, you know, people may question why would a non-cult survivor or whatever get involved with this. I'm finding out things about stuff like these cults that, and I'm hearing that it wasn't just her cult that, and during the interview, we said many cults are racist. I was like, I didn't know that. So I'm learning so much.
Yes. Well, and I will tell you that I had mentioned in the interview that my cult had a thing against mixing races, but they ended up changing that teaching after I left when they started the multiple marriage teaching. And I think it's partially because the leader himself decided that he wanted some of his wives to be women of other races. So I think he did away with that teaching because it no longer aligned with the way he thought.
As we see in a lot of cults, they just change like the interview we just did, the JW, now you can wear long pants, whatever. The men can have beards. They're adapting because they know people are going to rebel or leave. And so the cults are changing everything about them because they're struggling, I think.
Right. Oh, that certainly is part of it. And part of it is just that I think in general, it's based on what the leaders want at that period in time. And it's based on people's personal preferences. And that's how you know that it really isn't the truth when the truth keeps changing. Then how can it be the truth, right? It's just kind of interesting. Right.
No. They keep rewriting it. They keep rewriting it to fit their own narrative. So
yes, for sure. So once again, we do want to thank Brianna for taking the time to come on the show and share her story with us. We wish her all the best in her healing process. And we want to thank all of you for tuning into Cultimatum. As always, your support is appreciated. And if you would like, if you enjoyed today's episode, if you could please take a moment to rate and review our podcast on platforms such as Apple and Spotify. And don't forget to follow, share, and keep listening to all of our latest episodes.
You can also connect with us by joining our Facebook group, Cultimatum Podcast, where we dive deeper into these important topics.
And you can also find us on additional social media platforms, including Instagram, Pinterest, TikTok, YouTube, and Threads.
If you have a personal experience with cults or human trafficking that you'd like to share, reach out to us at cultimatumpodcast@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you.
And if you are an ex-cult member in need of any additional support, you can consider joining the Cult Escape and Recovery Group on Facebook.
You can also check out my other podcast, the Anonymous Andrew Modern Dating Podcast. If you'd like to help us with the cost of maintaining this podcast, you can show us support through the Buy Us a Cup of Coffee link in our show notes. Right below, just go to the show description, and it's right underneath the episode number. You'll see Buy Us a Cup of Coffee. Click on that and you can donate to the show. Every bit helps in our mission to spread awareness about cults and human trafficking.
And as always, stay safe, stay informed, and remember, you are not alone.